Welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast, the podcast that takes you on a journey into the world of leadership, offering a deep dive into the minds of accomplished leaders from various fields around the world. I'm your host, Amanda Jane, originally from the north of Ireland and now living in beautiful Cheshire, England. Together, we'll explore the strategies, experiences, and wisdom that have shaped these incredible leaders into the visionaries they are today through solo episodes and interviews. I'm a leadership and communications coach myself, and I'm passionate about promoting a coaching culture in the workplace, as well as empowering leaders to flourish personally and thrive professionally. Whether you're a seasoned executive, an aspiring leader in business, or someone simply fascinated by the art of leadership, each episode will provide valuable insights, practical tips, and inspiring stories. So get ready for a dose of motivation, innovation, and leadership brilliance on the Leadership Insights Podcast, brought to you by amandajane.co.uk. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast with your host, Amanda Jane. And today I have with me Julie Bale from the Real Me Mind Training. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. And have you had a chance to think about your favourite motivational song before we get into our chat?
Yes, I have. I didn't actually have to think very much at all. This is a song that's been at the front of my mind forever. As growing up as a teenager, I was a huge Beatles fan. And the song, whenever anybody says one song, it's got to be All You Need Is Love. Yeah. Because you know, you can learn how to be you in time is really rather marvellous. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, just seeing, I don't know if you've ever watched the video of them recording All You Need Is Love, and just all those incredible inspirational people in one room just singing All You Need Is Love, I love it.
Yeah. Oh, the Beatles are amazing. I adore the Beatles. I love everything they've ever done. And it's lovely that you picked that. I could ream off a million songs of theirs that I love, and I love the stories behind songs as well. And recently we watched the film Nowhere Boy. Have you seen that?
Yes.
That wasn't quite what I was expecting, but it was still good. Watched it with my teenage daughter. but it was so fascinating to see the background of John Lennon and you know, just the things that kind of led to, you know, to where he ended up. But I love all the background. But yeah, I love that song too, All You Need Is Love. How fascinating, amazing. And what about a motivational quote?
So the motivational quote that I've chosen is one, and I think maybe we hear it all the time, and you may well have had other guests who said it. But for me, it's got to be, comparison is the thief of joy, the Theodore Roosevelt, because so often, particularly in this space, in the online space, I see, and it is mainly women, but, you know, mainly women saying, oh, well, I can't do things because someone else is doing it, and not taking into consideration that we all have our own unique superpowers and that nobody does things like we do. And you know, if I could give that to anybody, that's the thing I'd like to give.
That is so true. And you're comparing yourself to perhaps the end of someone's journey when you're at the beginning, and it should be engraved in children's minds in school when you walk in. And social media is really the thief of our joy sometimes because of the image that a lot of people try to portray. And you do find yourself looking and thinking, as you get older, you get wiser, and I do have to stop myself and remind myself of that. And it's an active thing that I do. Don't compare yourself X, Y, Z. And you're absolutely right. It is the real thief of joy. And also you have to think to yourself, well, what is it that I really want? And how do I want to get there? And it's your journey, no one else's. And yeah, social media has a lot to answer for when it comes to comparison and this. And we've talked a lot about that actually on this podcast, and the image of making six figures on a beach with your laptop, which is what the dream that's being sold. But yeah, I couldn't agree more with that one. and a book, and this one doesn't have to be motivational, and we've had lots of chats about books because I like reading, so I steal everyone's book lists.
Well, my book or book series has to be The Lord of the Rings. Oh. And the reason for that is that I know that we often talk about how books motivate us to lead our lives. But this book and or this series of books was really important to me in a time when I was having real difficulties in my life. I was going through a really ugly breakup of a relationship, and having that to escape into this world where everything was, well, good and evil. And so, you know, not the complications and the grey areas of life, but good and evil, the fight against good and evil, and being able to escape to a place with elves and dwarves and dragons and, you know, all of that kind of thing was really wonderful, really therapeutic, and has just become a really beloved story thread for me.
Isn't that just the joy of reading, the complete escapism? And I love it when you've got a book and in the daytime you think, oh, I can't wait to read the next bit. You know you're onto a winner. Well, I've not read those books, but I have seen the films, which is a bit cheap, but I do read a lot. But that's not a set of books I've actually read. But yeah, I love that. Well, you're looking forward to reading the next bit. So how many books are there in that series? It's quite a saga, isn't it?
Well, there are three books. Three. The Lord of the Rings is the trilogy, but then of course there's The Hobbit before mm-hmm. that as well, which was, you know, written, which is a prequel to The Lord of the Rings.
So there's quite a lot to get your teeth into. Oh, that's amazing. Yes. Brilliant choice. Fantastic. So can you share your leadership journey with me and any milestones that have shaped your career?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking about this, my leadership journey does not go down a corporate path at all. But when I was thinking about leadership, I actually believe that my leadership journey started around the age of 10, and it started with a big teddy bear called Humphrey. And Humphrey was a teddy bear I won at a fair. And this teddy bear was so, and because I won him at the fair, it was so lucky, because I'd never won anything anywhere before. So lucky that we started, my friends and I, we started a club, and it was called the Humphrey Club. and basically Humphrey would sit while I devised games for us all to play and competitions for us all to do, and there would be medals, and so I had put myself into that role, and everybody else had seen me in that role of the one that created the Humphrey Club. Uh-huh. So, and I was the leader of the Humphrey Club.
How interesting. More fuel for my theory.
At that age. Yeah. And so I absolutely do believe, as you've said before, that there are these sort of, well, there are two things out there. There's this real innate feeling of being a leader. You have to want to be a leader, mm-hmm. because you can have the qualities of being a leader, but absolutely not want the responsibility of being a leader. And I think those were the two things for me. I thrived by being seen as the leader. I enjoyed embracing that position. And that sort of went on through being class rep, being student rep, you know, these places of and positions of responsibility. And then I trained as a teacher. After I finished my degree, I always knew I wanted to sing professionally. I'd known since the age of two, when I would stop people in the street and just assume they wanted to hear me. Why would they not want to hear me sing?
Oh, how lovely.
but I also knew that if I wanted to sing professionally and I have a big voice and I needed time to grow into my voice, that I needed to do something else as well. And teaching in the classroom was a really, really good option for me, again, as a guide, as a leader in that respect, you know, I enjoyed doing that. And then really what I grew into through the music was then working with choirs and leading choirs as a conductor and singing groups and that kind of thing, while I was also pursuing a career in singing myself.
So from that early age, you adopted that role and it just became your persona without question, and you just naturally took on that leadership role. That's so interesting. I love that, Humphrey Clum. So what stands out for you then over your leadership journey as being the most memorable? And I would love to know what you were singing when you were age two.
Well, I can tell you what I was singing. When I was age two, I was singing Last Waltz or Please Release Me by Engelbert Humperdinck. That's what I was singing.
I remember singing when I was very little, Mull of Kintyre by Wings. I loved to sing when I was little as well. I think there's nothing more adorable than a tiny child singing a big song. So who then were your inspiration and role models? Were you aware that you were embracing this leadership role, or was it just a natural thing that you did?
I think that some of it came from at the beginning, some of it came from being put in a position of responsibility by teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a sensible person, you go and do this errand for me. Mm-hmm. So it came from that. And so I always wanted to be the sensible person, the chosen one. You know, there was that came at the beginning. And then the amazing female role models who I came across tended to be the music teachers in my life. So there was a teacher called Bev Kelly, who was my O-level music teacher. And I was so in awe of this woman because she seemed, and yeah, we could talk about that in a moment as well, because she seemed so comfortable in her own skin, which I never was. And she seemed so in control of everything that she did and really comfortable with her own achievements and with her own skills. And that was really exciting to see a woman who was in charge. It was quite sort of unusual mm-hmm. in my life. So to see that was, you know, that was quite amazing. And then, of course, other female lecturers and later on my singing teacher, who is still my singing teacher now, a lady called Janice Chapman, who absolutely just trailblazing through singing, but doing it her own way, not listening to others because she had this innate sense of knowing what was right for her. And that was so exciting to be around as well.
Wow, I'm just listening to the themes of being comfortable in their own skin, knowing what they wanted to do, doing it their own way. And if you could bottle any of that, and that isn't that what we all want? So what did that look like to you? How did that present itself? What did comfortable in their own skin look like? Did they just do their own thing without question, or what was it that made you draw that conclusion?
It's exuding confidence, a relaxed manner, seeming to be just enjoying the moment. Those were the things that I found really attractive. But what is interesting then is when I started doing the work that I do now with hypnotherapy, and was working with singers at that point for performance anxiety and imposter syndrome and all of that kind of thing, then the singers who I worked with said to me, but that's what we saw in you, but that's not what was happening in me. In me was terror. But what they saw was this calm, you know, person, you know, the swan. They saw the swan and they didn't mm-hmm. see the legs.
The legs. Well, I was thinking of the ladies that you described, And what I imagine it are people who don't care about the judgment. They're just doing it their own way. And then you possibly were fearing judgment, but were giving the impression that you didn't care about being judged. And I'm just thinking, is that the key there to not care about being judged and just do it?
I think there most definitely is something around not about being comfortable in your own decisions and not needing to have the sort of external, the external referencing going on, that you don't need people to give you validation and whatever. Mm. But yet I also hugely believe that as a leader, one of the biggest and most important qualities that you need is the ability to be able to show people that they are valued.
Yeah. And they need to know that and feel it and believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what comes out naturally. Yeah. Interesting observations and interesting that you picked that up. So you mentioned your hypnotherapy there. So what do you do? What does that look like?
Well, it always came through, everything was through music. You know, I was singing, I was leading choirs, I was conducting, I was teaching singing, all of that stuff. And I had always felt that in my career, I hadn't got as far as I could have done, mainly because although for me in performance, I was usually okay in performance, but in audition, I was never representative of myself. I was always, always led down this place where I would be absolutely fine, completely prepared. Then I'd go into an audition, my legs would shake, my voice would shake, the stress response would take over completely. And I wouldn't be able to do, you know, catastrophic thoughts going on, and I wouldn't be able to do what I needed to do to be able to get the roles.
Wow. So performance was okay, but the audition was the difficulty that you needed to overcome. And that, how did you overcome that? What did you do?
So I have constantly been trying to find ways, because I've seen singers and I've seen people, and of course that's also something that you then realise, isn't it, that what you see on the outside isn't necessarily what goes on the inside from what people have said to me. But I had this idea that there must be a mindset, there must be a way, a place where you can get yourself into this rock solid mindset where you can go and achieve. And I was looking for that. And really, to cut a long story short, I found it in hypnotherapy. I found that I could use some of these amazing tools that then would help me change my mind. I wasn't aware that I was not my thoughts. Now mm-hmm. I'm aware that I am not my thoughts mm-hmm. and that they are just thoughts, and that thoughts can be changed and that they can be swapped out and that habits can be changed and that behavior can be changed. And I didn't know any of that. And hypnotherapy taught me that. And one big lesson was when I was leading choirs, and I took over a choral society, and there, even now, there are not as many female conductors as there are male. And there are lots and lots at lots of different levels of choir, but in the choral society world, the majority are men. And certainly in the area where I was working, there were no other female conductors. So when I took over the choral society, I went in with this idea of, I'm a woman, why will they listen to me? I'm a singer, and I haven't conducted forever as they had, you know, my conducting technique, for instance. And so why would they listen to me? I'm also left-handed. So they won't understand me, because obviously the difference between there's no difference. But there you are. I had that idea. And so I was going into rehearsals with this terror that they wouldn't listen to me, they weren't interested in me, why would they listen to a woman, what did I... And those thoughts were playing over in my head again and again and again and again. And I discovered this technique when I was training with my hypnotherapy training, this technique where you can actually swap out those thoughts for different thoughts. So you choose what would it be better to say to yourself, and then make those the automatic thoughts. And the thoughts I chose was, I have all the resources I need and my choir loves me. And I noticed that very night, so the day that I learned this exercise, I had a rehearsal. I was taking a rehearsal that night, and I walked into the rehearsal. I was totally at ease, free, and the choir had a fantastic time. And, you know, so we as leaders standing there in front of people, when we are sorted out, when our mindset is sorted out, everybody has a good time. And that was a huge learning for me.
It's incredible. And I'm nodding because I'm agreeing with everything that you say. That self-awareness and that ability to reframe those thoughts. And people are gradually learning it now. But when you reframe that thing that you perceive to be negative, you turn it around completely and you say that to yourself. And you can reprogram your brain. You know, the neuroplasticity, you can completely reframe the internal dialogue. And once that penny drops, it takes a while to accept that it is possible, but it is absolutely possible. And when you see the transformation in people when they finally get it. But for me, the key is the self-awareness and the damage you can do to yourself. You know, the brain plays tricks, we know that, but to reframe those things and those key beliefs of your successes, where you know what you're capable of, you know what you can do, you know what people believe. But also in leadership, you set the tone. I've always believed this, when you go anywhere, you set the tone. So you go to lead your choir and you're not feeling it and whatever, and that's what's going to happen in the evening. But if you go in like Muhammad Ali, because that's who I have in my head, I am the greatest, you're invincible, and you believe you are, so you are. So I just think that concept is incredible that you managed to bring that into you, and now you're passing that on to other people. And you know what, you don't learn this in school. You don't learn this in the environments where you really need to learn it. And that makes me a little bit sad. You know, my discovery was accidental. It was personal research. I talked to people, like yourself. And again, it was an accidental discovery. And it makes me sad that people are finding these things out by accident rather than it being part of, you know, our education.
Yeah, and I think that what for me, things moved on from there for me, because I was working with singers, I was working with choirs, but I had always, as I said earlier, I'd always been very uncomfortable in my own skin, and uncomfortable in my own skin because of my weight and because of my perceived weight issues and so on. And so I'd learned all these really cool techniques with hypnotherapy, and the joys of the difference between hypnotherapy and doing sort of mindset affirmation work is that we can actually reprogram it. We can, by practicing it again and again and again, it does become the automatic thought. It's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was, well, how about because I've been reading, having been a lifelong dieter, you know, I've been reading about the new weight loss drugs. And I thought, how about if I created a hypnotic one? I wonder what would happen then. I wonder if it would work. So I sent out just a message to a number of clients who I was working with at the time, friends, family, and so on, and said, look, I don't know if it's going to work, but if you want to give it a go, we can give it a go. We'll try it for 6 weeks. We'll see what happens. Every single person lost over a stone in that time. And so, and that program then has been worked on from there. So we've been doing it for nearly, it's a year this month. And three of the founder members, between us, the three of the founder members have lost 10 stones in weight. Wow. And have found, this is my, you know, it's, I call it the real me, because we found much more of the real us, because when we're not wasting all our time worrying about our weight, then we can start to think about what is it that we really want to do with our lives? What is the real me? And so my hypnotherapy has gone down that path. So that's what I'm guiding at the moment, working mainly with weight loss, but also this other stuff that I learned myself with conducting and singers, I'm now putting together into a program for the business entrepreneurs that I'm working with too.
Wow, how interesting. I just love that. So it's the mindset and reframing, and you can go from one platform to another and apply that to other areas of your life. That's incredible. I love that. Amazing. Wow. Thank you. I'll go and spend some time thinking about that now. But it's true. It's true. And the time that we waste on those thoughts and weight and the list is endless on the things that, mm-hmm. that we berate ourselves for. What an interesting observation that you did with that group. So we'll get to your website details at the end, because I'm sure a lot of people want to know a little bit more about that. That's absolutely fascinating. So how do you harmonize all of this? So we'll use to talk about work-life balance, so I prefer to use harmony. So how do you have harmony in your life?
Well, for me, hypnotherapy brings harmony, because I have had a very, very busy life, and music as well, with a life in music means that it's most evenings, weekends, and so on. So actually doing less music and doing more hypnotherapy has meant that I've been able to reclaim some of my evenings and weekends, which as an adult, I've never had. I've worked mainly, you know, weekends, performing weekends, mm-hmm. and evenings and so on. So when the family are around, I'm busy doing that. But for myself, the balance for myself, for my sort of mental health, has so much helped by hypnotherapy, because of that, the state of relaxation that we use to begin that is so much more important as the beginning of the exercise. It gave me that balance so that I was able to go inwards more and at the same time make those changes while I was doing that work. So I find it great. It is my way of slowing down.
Sometimes I forget I'm on a podcast because I'm so fascinated by what you're saying, and I just know that I'm going to be googling all this stuff. I'm going to be looking at your website, because the power that we have within us is incredible. And when you meet people that prompt that interest and that fascination in you, it just is just so amazing. And I'm really keen to learn more. So what legacy do you hope to leave as a leader, and how do you measure your impact of leadership? And I think it's probably going to be a big impact, because I'm going to be researching more for a start.
Well, as you said earlier about this stuff not being taught in schools, I don't think we're going to get to a point where this is going to be put on the national curriculum because of the way that, unfortunately, education is. However, I, with the weight loss work, I've been working with, I work with mainly people like myself, as we all do, so sort of menopausal women mainly. I work with a lot of men. They all do incredibly well too, but some youngsters. And I have one client, her daughter, as my client was losing weight, she's lost 5 stones now, this client. Wow. And as she was losing weight, her clothes were going to her daughter, who was then wearing them because her daughter was that size. And one day I took her aside and I said, how does she feel about that? And after having a discussion, the daughter then said, actually, I haven't ever said this before, but I want to come. I want to learn this. I want to do this too. And she too has now lost 2.5 stones and is wearing, this is the beautiful thing. She worked in a place where they wear a uniform, and she'd always had to wear a man's uniform because she didn't fit in a woman's uniform. And now she wears a woman's uniform, and that was her proudest moment. And I said, you know, if we can save women 20, 30 years of this ridiculous diet cycle, you know, then that would be a wonderful legacy for me, for people to learn that they can give up the dieting, give it up, because it's a trap. You know, Susie Orbach, famously, her book Fat is a Feminist Issue, you know, it really is. We have been trapped and punished by all of this. And if we can give that up, and if I can give people really tangible ways that work to be able to then just throw away dieting and be comfortable in their own skins, you know, we're back there again, then that would be the greatest legacy for me.
That would be an incredible legacy. And one, the other thing that's occurring to me at the moment, mindfulness and self-awareness. There's a lot of talk at the moment in the media about mindfulness, and maybe we might get there in education. There's a lot of influential people at the moment that are using those words and that language, and hopefully it's prompting people to maybe do some research of their own. And you know, with people like yourself that are out there talking about these things and the effects, and people having responsibility for themselves and looking for guidance and looking to leaders and looking for help, because you're not automatically born with the knowledge. And hopefully as time goes by, maybe those things will be accepted as the norm, and people will be using more language like that. But no, that'd be incredible legacy to learn. And it just pains me when you see the, I don't even want to say it on a podcast, but you know, the pills that you can buy and blah, 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 the impact that has on young people. And to come at it with a healthy attitude, with a mindful attitude and a self-aware attitude, is just, it's the greatest gift, isn't it? So where can we find out more about all this wonderful stuff, your website and your social media handles?
Yes, so you can get in touch with me. My website, you can get to through therealmemindtraining.com, and my Instagram is Julie Bale Mind Training.
Wonderful. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. I can just get so absorbed into these conversations. I have loved every second, and it's been such a joy. Julie, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much for asking me. It's been lovely to talk.
Thank you for listening to the Leadership Insights podcast today, and special thanks to my lovely guest, Julie Bale. Join me on the next episode for more inspirational leadership stories and insights. You can follow me on Instagram at Coach Amanda Jane, or visit my website, amandajane.co.uk. Bye for now.